Welcome to the Free Seminary Podcast, the show that plants invasive little seeds of hope in your heart and mind as we hear stories about the incredible leaders bridging divides, serving their neighbors, and making waves in society. From entrepreneurs and pastors to volunteers and nonprofit directors, we'll learn what it takes to change the world. My guest today is Mandy Case. We met at After Hours Denver, where I serve as pastor and director. And I later discovered that Mandy is the founder and director of Belief Home, an organization in Ghana that helps kids move from risk to thriving. I wanted to have her on the show today because her story and the story of Belief Home remind me that I am not alone in my desire to put more love in the world. And I wanted to share her inspiration with you. Mandy, I am so excited to share your story today. Thank you for being on. Thank you for being a guest and being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to share what we're doing with Belief Home.
Yeah. So why don't we just like launch in, and maybe you could just start by telling people a little bit about what Belief Home is and what maybe current project big things you're going and doing right now.
Yeah. Well, Belief Home is a nonprofit, and we function out of Dodowa, Ghana. So it's a rural town in West Africa in the country of Ghana. And we have built a new home for an orphanage that existed there previous to us, but they were struggling to fulfill their own mission of helping children. And I was lucky enough to come across them and found a way that we could help them and serve them by building them a new home. And that's where we started our interaction with the kids there in Dodowa. And I have spent the last 7 months actually living in Dodowa and seeing really what day in, day out looks like. And Belief Home's mission is to help children thrive, to stop the cycle of vulnerability that brings generation after generation of orphans into these orphanages. And how do we stop that and help these kids thrive so that they can become leaders in their own communities and help other kids stop the cycle of vulnerability? And that turns out to be so much more than just a home. There's so much more to thriving than just having a safe place to live. Now, a safe place to live is imperative because nothing else matters if you aren't being fed and don't have a place you can put your head down at night and feel safe and be out of the elements and things like that. So it was a great place to start. But now we have branched into, you know, helping with healthcare. So we have two nurses that are local nurses. They are community health nurses who really know the community health needs. They know, you know, what these children are going to face and how to help them overcome these health obstacles. They help us navigate the health system. We have five special needs kids that live at the home. And with special needs in a developing country, navigating who to see, what doctors to see, you know, what questions to ask, how to get the type of medications they need is a whole new level of difficult. And our nurses really play a critical role in doing that. And we also are so fortunate that we were just able to hire a tutor for the home. So all of our kids, for the first time in a really long time, all of our kids are in school, including all of our special needs kids, which again was another challenge to thriving. It's amazing what we can do when we pull enough people in to the community to help in all the ways that children need to thrive, in thriving physically and emotionally and nutritionally and, you know, educationally. And so that's where we are right now, is finding all of the ways that children need to thrive and bringing in the right people to do that.
So You mentioned that there's a pretty wide array of kids. You have kids with special needs, you have kids with and disabilities really, and then those that really have just been handed a bad hand in life. Do you have any stories or any particular kids where what they've been through and how they got to the orphanage or how they're doing now that Belief Home is kind of helping to expand what is offered, how it's really been changed for those children?
Yes, I have one story, and I want to emphasize that this is one story when we have dozens of stories of kids who are doing better. But Georgina, she is, don't tell anybody this, but she's one of my favorites. You're not supposed to have a favorite child. You only have one, so you don't have to worry about this. But when you have more than one, you can't have a favorite. So they can't know that Georgina is my favorite. But she is
So do I need to work on editing this part out? Oh.
well, I think if you know me for too long, or if you follow our Facebook for too long, you see how much I interact with Georgina. But Georgina was born, she was born a twin, and the birth was very difficult, and unfortunately the mother died during birth. And so during this difficult birth, Georgina suffered some birth injuries that resulted in cerebral palsy. And in these communities where there is still not a lot of education about special needs, a lot of these communities still live very hand to mouth. A lot of them are still, farmers, and they still work on the barter system. And so there's still a lot of old traditions that come along with that. And historically, these special needs children didn't live very long, so not a lot of resources were allocated to them. And unfortunately, with the mother dying, so the father was left alone with two new babies, one of which didn't develop normally. And not too distant in the past, they would have just left the child to die. They would have used them in ceremonies to ensure future children would be more healthy. But this father didn't want that for his child, but he didn't know what to do. And so she kind of just got left at this orphanage as a better option than what he could give her. And cerebral palsy is a disease that can have so many different manifestations. You can't say any one child looks like another, but she spent her whole, first 5 years of her life, she didn't really have any control of her muscles. So she couldn't feed herself, she couldn't walk, she didn't have control of her eye muscles, so she couldn't even look directly at people. So she just kind of existed. And that is where we take children from existence or surviving into thriving. And since we have been able to bring all these resources to the Rising Star Orphanage, Georgina now, through health interventions, medical interventions, doctor's appointments, occupational therapy, physical therapy, physiotherapy, things that are resources that are just way outside of what a normal orphanage can offer. Georgina now has a walker, and she runs around using her walker like crazy. She interacts with everyone. She has just found her voice. So now she likes to yell at her siblings to bring her things, and we call her the queen of the house because she will tell you to move as she's coming through with her walker. She basically commands you to part ways so she can come through with her walker. And she is sassy. And she just started school. So she is 6 years going on seven. And for the first time in her life, she's going to school because we have got her to the point where she's not just surviving, she's not just sitting as a lump on the ground. She can interact, she can talk. And this sassy little girl is so smart. She learned her ABCs and her 1-2-3s in 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
And she will tell you them. If you ask her, you might hear the ABCs like maybe more than one time or maybe five times more than you wanted. But she wants to make sure that you know that she knows them. So, I mean, and that's just one story of, you know, of going from surviving to thriving. And I get so excited about it because I'm like, and the next story is, and the next story is, and I know that there are stories coming, you know, that there are stories that haven't been formed yet that I'm going to one day say, and this is how this child went from this to this.
Wow. Yeah, those stories are powerful. They just, and there's a part of me just wants to just like, make space and ask you about every single child. I know we don't have time for it, but oh my gosh. Yeah. It's interesting. I think we should delve a little bit into your story because your personal story of getting there, because there's this piece of it, which is, I know a fair amount of people that want to go to other places and do good and to make these drastic changes. And they read about these stories and get excited to go do things, stories like yours of going to a place and making a difference. And especially within the church, we have a lot of discussions about this. And you yourself do not identify as a Christian. And I think that's a really unique part of this story and how you are leading this and making this difference. And you are surrounded by many pretty darn devout Christians in Ghana. And you continue to be there. And there are just so many pieces of that I think are just absolutely amazing and inspiring. And I'm wondering if you would take us back to what took you to Ghana, that you're even in the area that you find out about this orphanage, and then maybe kind of into how it blossomed into this idea of Belief Home. Would you take us back to those first few days of, you know, what, why are you in Ghana and what are you doing there and what sparks this, like, oh, like I could help with that.
I will. And I will try and give you a complete but concise view of it, because if I pull in all of those facets that you talked about, you and I could be talking for days, because like you said, it is, there's so many components to it. And you know, I will start with, I am not Christian. I never planned to go and live in a developing country in Africa and, you know, help an orphanage. And I honestly never planned to run my own NGO or, you know, try and be a director of anything. It was just a weird twist of fate. And I think a lot, I have an easy time communicating with Christians because I think we believe the same things, but maybe call them different. So people say that, you know, God called me to this. I feel like the universe pulled me and I listened. And so being surrounded by Christians is okay because I can use the same vocabulary for the same experiences that we have. And I actually had planned a completely different route for my life. I was finishing my master's degree in public health, and I was going to go and work for a big organization and direct global level events. And part of that was I had an opportunity to be a community public health advisor in Dodowa, you know, a small community in Ghana. And so I did that as my master's internship. I was there for 1 month, and our primary goal was to go around to the small communities and talk public health issues, which a lot of time are, you know, high blood pressure, of course, ever-present malaria, hepatitis B, and other community health concerns. And one of the things we did is we went to schools and we taught hand washing and hygiene. And the public health nurse that was taking me around to these different communities, we had been to schools before. I had my whole little fun, you know, elementary school skit about hand washing down. And he said, well, the school's closed, but we'll just go to this orphanage. And I had been to orphanages in other parts of the world. I've been to orphanages in Haiti and India. And to be honest, they're awful places most of the time. They're places that kids, if they're lucky, survive. And you can see how devoid of love and attention and really any concern that there is in these places. So with my past experience, I had kind of steeled myself to walk into this orphanage. But when I did walk in, the kids were sitting in their rows. They were attentive. They were clean. They were fully dressed, like tops and bottoms. And all the kids from small to big, you know, were not striving for my attention. Like in orphanages in Haiti, they would have to pull the children off of me because they wanted that love for just one more minute. And that wasn't the case here. When I was done with my hand washing skit, the kids jumped up, the bigger ones helped the younger ones. They ran off, they went to lunch. And I was like, wait a minute, what is this place? And I asked, you know, my director, this is an orphanage? He said, yes. I said, are you sure? He said, yes. I said, oh, it must be run by a Westerner, right? And he's like, no, it's this little old lady. And he points to this, you know, tiny little 4'10" elderly woman, and she's been running it forever. And I'm like, okay. So when I left, I just couldn't shake them from my mind. And I was like, they're doing something right. They've got something down. I mean, you could tell that they're still in a developing country. Like, it's not prospering like we would think of prospering, but I was like, they're doing all right. And so I had it in my mind, I'm going to go back and I'm going to help them, because that's what you do, right? I see something that's happening, I'm going to help them. So I went back a few days later and I went to sit down with this little old woman. And from my education in public health, one of the big things they teach is that you don't assume what the community needs, you ask them. And so I've got my new, you know, master's degree, and I'm going to go and ask her what she needs. Now, in my Western mind, I have this idea, she's going to ask me for rice, she's going to ask me for clothes, she might ask me for money, you know, what is my budget? I had a budget about $500 in mind that I could figure I could come up with. And so I took my interpreter and I went and sat with her. And, you know, I said, you're doing such a good job. I want to help you. What can I do to help you? And she says, oh, you know, whatever you give is fine. We'll appreciate it. And me being my stubborn self, I was like, no, what is your heart's desire? If you could have anything, what could I give you? And she looks at me. You can see she's kind of looking around. She's kind of, you know, what do I say? What do I say? And finally, she looks at me and says, we need a new home. My response, what? A building? Like, you want a building? She says, yes. I say, no. Like, no. No, 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 no. That is, whoa, wait a minute, pause. Like, what do you mean you need a building? I was like, she's like, yes, we need a new home. And I was like, later on, with much reflection, I realized that that moment is what John O'Leary would call an inflection point. And I kind of had to look inside myself and say, do I want to give them something so I can pat myself on the back and say, you did a good job, Mandy. You helped orphans in Africa, and go home and go about my life. Was that my goal when I came here? Or do I actually really want to help?
That is such a key question that not enough
of us ask ourselves, do I want to do this because I need to do something good to make myself feel better? Or do I want to be a part of actually making this change and helping people to make it in their own lives?
And it takes a lot of work to get to the point where you're going to ask yourself that question.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, thank the universe, thank God, whoever you want to give credit to, that I had done that work over the last 10 years of trying to be my most true, most authentic self. And so I believed that the most authentic me was asking her, what do you really need? And so the most authentic me had to think and say, no, I actually want to do what you need. And so that was the beginning of the dialogue of, okay, what, why do you need a house? As it turns out, the building that they were living in was built in 1842. And I'm going to tell you, that's older than the city of Denver, right? Like, that is before commercial concrete. And it's made of mud, mortar, and wood, and it was crumbling. And her fear was that if the house structurally should fall, then the orphanage would fail. And she couldn't be okay with that. These are kids that she had raised. These are kids that she had saved. These kids come from all sorts of backgrounds. I mean, some so awful, we don't even repeat them. You know, and to think when she told me that what would happen if the building fell is that all these kids would end up back on the street, back in the places they came from, back in the situations they came from. Ugh. That exactly, my heart just dropped. It's hard enough to know that kids live like that on a daily basis in the world anyway. But the thought of being rescued, then end up back in that, that was my, oh, hell no. Sorry, I hope I can say that. But, I mean, that's exactly what I was. I was like, this, no way this is going to happen. No, that is not okay with me. So, yes, I will build you a home. And thank God, thank the universe for naivety, because if I had any idea how much this was going to require, how much money, how many resources, how many people would have to get involved, what it would take from me to make this building a reality, if I had known, there is not a chance I could have said yes. And so from the point of naivety, I said, okay, yes, I will build you a home. And it really has been the only and most significant yes of my life. And that, you know, fast forward from that yes to 2.5 years later, you know, we are a nonprofit. We have raised over $100,000. We are, you know, we've only built the first story of Belief Home, but we took kind of this detour into, once we had established, you know, a safe living space, we realized what the next most important thing was, all these other things, was getting a handle on the healthcare, was getting these special needs kids on a track they needed to be, was helping the kids with education, getting all of them into school. You know, we have kids going to, I don't know, like 7 different schools. So we kind of took a veer away from the second story. We will go back to it, because that, again, will be more spaces for kids to thrive. We're going to build a classroom on the second story. We're going to have a library on the second story. We're actually going to build a clinic, not just a closet for our nurses, but a real clinic where they can provide real health care. And, you know, so that's kind of where we're going from one crazy... at the time I said yes to Auntie Baby, to the lady, the matriarch, I was unemployed. I was finishing a graduate degree and I was homeless. I was bouncing around both cities and houses that I lived in while I was trying to finish my master's degree. So I kind of imagined, you know, $20,000 and we can build this new home. And Wow, was I so wrong. So wrong.
This is the craziest part to me is that I follow on Instagram a lot of nonprofits, and I don't know what this says about me, but I follow a lot of nonprofits, a few friends, and then the other thing is kind of like self-help kind of things, but it's like communities of people encouraging one another to put in the effort, put in the hard work, and to do the things that will help them to thrive and to basically set up the next generation to be kind of the first generation that is wealthy, has more experiences, more the extreme spectrum of opportunities if they should want to go get them.
Yeah.
And in a lot of those discussions, something that's really fascinating to me about them is they have a wide range. They're the people that want to, have their children be the first generation that don't grow up in poverty. And then there's the other people that like they just want to gain enough wealth so that they can buy a house, and then well, then you could buy the 5-bedroom house, and then you could buy the 10-bedroom house, and then you could put on this addition and that addition and the pool and the this and the that. And what's fascinating to me is you've done the really hard hustle side of it, but you haven't done it to put in a pool in your backyard, and you haven't done it in order to put on that in that new library in your own home or that new movie theater in your own home, but you're doing it so that you can get a library for some kids in a whole nother country, and ones that it will help them to break free from this cycle of poverty. And it's just absolutely mind-blowing to me. I'm just, yeah, I gotta get that out there and in the air.
I don't even know how to reply to that because I don't have a reply. I mean,
No, you don't have to.
yeah,
I
okay.
just want you to know that I deeply appreciate it, and I know that there's a movement of people that want to offer those things to a generation. We get talked about a lot, I think, millennials in this idea of oh, they're not having kids anymore and like being more self-centered. And I think that your story, and this is really for the listeners. Sorry, you're just gonna have to like endure me talking like nicely about you. But I think your story is so great in helping people to understand that really part of what's happening is not just a shift towards millennials caring only about ourselves and giving ourselves things, because in truth, we also have like one of the most nomadic generations ever. And we go where things take us for experiences, and then are giving things and orienting our lives in such a way that we can give back to the next generation that may not be biologically or adoptive our children. And I think your story just highlights that in such a unique and amazing way that you are helping to do much the same thing that some are seeking to do for their own family, but you're seeking to do it for families of people that will. Yeah, they're not orphans, aren't ch children, ch aren't children forever. So I'm getting a little choked
Yeah,
up as I'm saying
yeah,
it. Eventually,
yeah.
people are
That's,
adults.
and unfortunately, statistically, orphans create orphans, and that's what we want to stop.
Right.
Even if we, even if, you know, we bring them in and we feed them and shelter them, their experiences as children kind of predetermine what their own children are going to experience. And we have the ability to stop that. We have the ability for them more than just to survive to adulthood, but to break that. I mean, they are the only ones that can break that cycle. Yes, you know, orphans kind of just happen in, you know, nature, but if we raise kids who are able to take care of their kids, then their kids will take care of their kids. And when you think of the ripple effect of that, you are affecting not just a generation, you're affecting a community, you're affecting a country. And then, you know, how far the ripples go, so far you can't track them anymore. And that's really, like, talk about getting tripped up. Like, that's really when I start, you know, getting the, I can't quite hold all of that and absorb all of that. But along what you were just talking about people who want to give, the whole story of Belief Home is people who want to give, who want to be a part of change in the world. Like I said, we have raised over $100,000 now, and minus two donors. If you take just two of our donors out, our average donation is $75. So people giving what little they have over and over and over again is what has built Belief Home. Belief Home has been built by single moms who give 10 bucks when they have it. It's built by families. A 10-year-old boy did a bake sale at Christmas because he saw our story on Facebook.
Wow.
And that is how Belief Home is built. Belief Home wasn't built by, I have zero corporate donors, zero. They are all individual donors. It's 100 people giving what little they have when they have it over a period of time that has built Belief Home. And when I think of those ripples and that 10-year-old boy who learned at 10 years that he can make a difference, like, what generational ripples does that cause?
Yeah. You know, it makes me think of the different levels of involvement that people can have. And so you have those who are giving that are at this point that it's at now. And you have yourself taking on this big project to start building out this facility. And prior to that, you have Anta Baby, who is just deciding to take in a couple kids who don't have parents. Mm-hmm. And that is one, you know, particular type of stopgap, just the ability to love on people right where they are. And it's so tempting to say, but this, what difference is this going to make in the larger scheme of things? Because there's so many places that are still just not run well and don't have the resources. And well, neither did she to a degree, right? In that super old building that was a danger to anybody staying in it. And you have just all these problems. But in that corner of the world, and to that child or those children that she's taking care of, they at least now have this certain semblance of an understanding of themselves as loved and as a beloved child. And that,
yes,
that doesn't happen without that. And then, of course, it's not going, that belovedness is just a first step in breaking cycles of poverty, and then getting additional resources and helping to shape a perspective and a worldview and understanding of moving through the world that helps to align us as people that are a part of this greater whole. But it's, yeah, you know, those step by step, that's all we can do.
That's really all you can do. And, you know, I have so many donors who are like, I wish I could do more, or I wish I could do what you're doing, or I wish, you know, these things. And it, if I didn't have the single mom who was hustling every day, giving us the 10 bucks when she had it, like, Belief Home wouldn't exist. If Auntie Baby didn't start taking in orphans, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, there wouldn't have been an orphanage that, you know, I could be a part of, you know. So it's give when you can, as often as you can. I mean, this is what the Wesley, John Wesley, I'm sorry, I'm not going to quote it right because he's not my guy, but like the do what you can, when you can, as much as you can, as often as you can.
Yeah, as long as ever as you
can.
Yeah, as long as ever you can.
You know, and when I look around and I see all the places that we're not helping and all the kids who are suffering, and it can, I mean, I live in it every day. I have to walk down the street and see the kids who are not thriving. And I could let myself get overwhelmed with that. And honestly, some days I do. Some days I have to retreat to my room and cry because it's all too much. But at those times, I have to remember that to the world, you might only be one person, but to one person, you might be the world. And Georgina's life is forever changed. If I walked away now and never saw her again, her life is forever changed for the interaction that I had with her. And I have to remember that when I see all the need around me. And I think that a lot of people, especially in the Western world, think the need is so great, what can I do? And if you can just do what you can do, it does make a difference. And those matter. If you don't have $1 million to give, give your 10 bucks because it matters.
So true. So, so true. So that's a perfect segue, actually, to the question, where can people go to find out more and to be one of those that helps with the drop in the bucket that fills the bucket?
Yes, please come along. Come along with us. We got some great plans. So our website is beliefhome.org, and that will direct you to any other resource that you want to donate. Or you can always find us on Facebook and Instagram at Belief Home Ghana. And that really, even if you just want to see what we're up to, follow us for the heartwarming stories that we can tell on Facebook and Instagram. It's really my way to share my kids with the world and to share the world with my kids.
I love that. To remind people that those who are fighting for good, putting more good in the world, putting more love in the world, doing these great things are everyday humans. And so we like to play a little game of this or that, put you on the spot and make you choose between a few different things. So, Mandy, are you up for playing a game of would you rather this or that?
I will give it my best shot.
All right.
Let's... I'm kind of an all or nothing person, so I don't know about choosing.
Okay, well, we'll find out.
All right.
Here we go. All right, Mandy. First couple are going to be a little easier, and then we'll get a little harder, and then we'll give you the most important question. All right. First question, hamburger or pizza?
Pizza.
Ooh.
Oh, my gosh, pizza.
All or nothing real quick. All right, now you got to give us some toppings.
Cheese. Just give me the cheese.
Ooh, you're a plain
Anything
cheeser.
Else is a bonus. But there is no dairy products in Ghana, and I will tell you, my number one craving is pizza.
That's
Give
awesome.
Me all the pizza.
Oh, love it. All right, next one. Dinosaur, a movie about dinosaurs or monsters?
Oh. Can they be in space? I mean, monsters in space.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, the cop-out answer is to say Power Rangers, and then you have monsters and dinosaurs, kind of, and trucks
oh
and the,
you know,
all the things. But I like, I'm digging monsters in space.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see...
I mean, that's Star Wars.
Yeah,
so
I kind of want to see dinosaurs versus so monsters in space. Whoa, I see.
I see.
You just want to choose Star Wars. That's wonderful. Is it today like Star Wars Day or is that yesterday? I don't know.
May the 4th.
Somebody will have this like come out late and be confused and yeah. All right. Little bigger one. Maybe this will be easy for you. We'll see. I think
okay.
experience kind of both. So, would you rather go to a mountain retreat or an oceanside spa?
Yes, please.
That is a good answer. Dang. Oh man, I don't want to offend any previous guest, but man, that I might have taken the cake with that one.
Yep. Telling you.
Okay, so here's the biggest question. Most important one. What is the Denver, Colorado staple that everyone who lives here or visits simply must try?
Craft beer popping.
Ooh. Man, that is a good answer. You're like specific and you're also like open.
Go try them all.
I love that. Yeah, I like the idea of like doing a brewery tour around and just like, man, that'd be awesome.
Yes.
Well, Mandy, you have been a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for being on. Thank you so much for sharing about Belief Home. It's just been a pleasure talking with you and hearing more about the story.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great talking with you and sharing our story.
Well, changemakers, how far the seeds of hope and change get planted is dependent upon you. Help us spread these ideas far and wide by subscribing to the podcast and sharing an episode with a friend. You can also learn more and find additional resources by visiting our website, www.freeseminary.education. Until next time, dare to follow your dreams and put more love in the world.